Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a really crucial area for understanding how government accountability works. Municipal liability under 42 USC Section 1983. For you law students listening, grasping when a city or county can be held responsible for violating someone's constitutional rights is absolutely essential. It's not just about individual officers. Sometimes the responsibility really lies with the institution itself.
That's right. And to really see how this plays out, we're diving into the case of Trezevant v. City of Tampa.
Okay.
This 11th Circuit Court of Appeals case, well, it clearly illustrates how a municipality's own policies can lead to constitutional violations and, ultimately, their liability.
So the core question we're going to be exploring today is this. Can a city be held liable for a constitutional violation that arises from its policies, even if the specific officers involved aren't found personally liable? It's a nuanced legal issue, so let's get into the details.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's start with what happened. James C. Trezevant was pulled over in Tampa, Florida. The officer issued citations for a few things. Reckless driving, not having his vehicle registration, and this is key, refusing to sign the traffic citation. Now, that last charge was later determined to be invalid under Florida law.
Okay, so he gets pulled over, a few tickets, including one that shouldn't have even been issued. What happens next?
Well, despite Mr. Trezevant having cash, actual cash, to post the required bond for the traffic violations right there with him, he wasn't allowed to do so at the scene.
Really? He had the money.
Yeah. Instead, he was taken to the Hillsborough County Board of Criminal Justice's central booking facility.
That does seem like an unnecessary escalation when he had the money ready.
Exactly. Once at central booking, standard procedure kicked in.
Yeah.
He was frisked. His belongings, including his bond money, were taken. And he was placed in a holding cell.
Oh.
Now, here are some really crucial details about this detention. It lasts about 23 minutes.
23 minutes, okay.
During that time, Mr. Trezevant wasn't told why he was still being held, especially since he could post bond. He wasn't allowed to contact an attorney, and perhaps most concerningly, he was placed in a holding cell with individuals who had been arrested for actual criminal offenses.
Wow. Held with individuals arrested for crimes, even though he was just dealing with traffic tickets and had the cash for bail. That sounds like a significant deprivation of liberty, even for 23 minutes.
That's precisely what Mr. Trezevant argued. He filed a lawsuit under Section 1983, alleging violations of his civil rights. He named several defendants, the City of Tampa, the arresting officer, Officer Eicholtz, and the Hillsborough County Board of Criminal Justice, or HCBJ, along with some of their personnel.
And what were the specific legal claims he was making? What was the argument?
He claimed improper arrest against the city and Officer Eicholtz, and then improper incarceration against the HCBJ and its personnel. It's worth noting that some state law claims he initially filed were later dismissed.
Oh, okay.
So the core of the lawsuit really focused on these federal civil rights violations.
So this goes to trial in the U.S. District Court for the Middle District of Florida. What happened there? Did it go before a jury?
Yes. The case went before a jury, and after considering the evidence, they reached a verdict. They found in favor of Mr. Trezevant and awarded him $25,000 in damages.
$25,000, okay.
Importantly, this award was specifically against the City of Tampa and the Hillsborough County Board of Criminal Justice for the unconstitutional deprivation of his liberty.
Ah, so not the individuals.
Right. The individual defendants, Officer Eicholtz and the HIBJ personnel, were not held personally liable.
That's a key distinction, isn't it? The city and county were found liable, but the individuals weren't. This outcome, well, as you might expect, led to further legal action. So what happened after the verdict? It sounds like both sides might have had issues with that outcome.
You're right. Both sides appealed the district court's decision. Mr. Trezevant appealed the amount of attorney's fees he was awarded. On the other side, the City of Tampa and the HCBJ appealed the judgment itself, arguing, you know, they shouldn't be held liable and that the $25,000 in damages was excessive.
So the 11th Circuit then had to weigh in on whether the jury got it right. What was the central legal issue the appellate court had to grapple with?
Well, the core issue for the 11th Circuit was whether sufficient evidence was presented at trial to support the jury's finding that the city and county policies caused Mr. Trezevant's constitutional violation.
Right, the policy link.
Exactly. And they also had to consider whether the $25,000 damage award was excessive.
And what was the 11th Circuit's conclusion? Did they uphold the district court's decision? Did they agree with the jury?
Yes, they did. The 11th Circuit affirmed the district court's judgment. They agreed with the jury that Mr. Trezevant's brief detention directly resulted from systemic policy inadequacies jointly implemented by the City of Tampa and the HCBJ.
Systemic inadequacy.
Okay. The court emphasized that these flawed policies directly caused his unlawful detention, even though it was relatively short.
Okay, so the court is focusing on the policies themselves, not just the actions of the individuals. How did they make that connection? What was the key legal principle they relied on?
Right. This is where the concept of the official policy being the moving force behind the constitutional violation becomes crucial.
Ah, the moving force doctrine.
Exactly. The 11th Circuit specifically referenced another case, Gilmer v. City of Atlanta, in their reasoning. This doctrine, it stems from Supreme Court precedent. And it essentially says that for a municipality to be liable under Section 1983, the unconstitutional harm must be a direct result of the municipality's official policies or customs.
So not just a random act by an employee.
Precisely. In Trezevant's case, the court determined that the failure to allow him to post bond immediately and his subsequent detention were directly attributable to inadequacies in the established policies and procedures of both the City of Tampa and the HCBJ regarding processing individuals arrested for minor offenses who could post bond. So for you, the listener, think about how even seemingly administrative policies like the steps for processing paperwork after an arrest, or the protocols for initial medical screening at booking, if poorly designed or implemented, could become the moving force behind a constitutional violation, even if no individual actor intended that outcome.
So it wasn't just a mistake by the booking officer. It was a flaw in the system itself that led to the violation. That makes sense. But, you know, 23 minutes, while certainly unpleasant, might seem brief to some. How could such a short detention be considered a constitutional violation? Isn't there usually some threshold for the severity of a deprivation for it to rise to that level? How does the court balance that brevity with the fundamental rights at stake?
That's a really crucial point, and the 11th Circuit made it clear that the length of the detention wasn't the only factor. What made those 23 minutes unconstitutional was the complete lack of legal justification for the detention once Mr. Trezevant had indicated his ability and intention to post bond.
Ah, okay, so the justification disappeared.
Correct. Holding him in a holding cell under those circumstances without informing him why he was still detained and without allowing him access to counsel, well, that violated his Fourth Amendment right against unreasonable seizure and his 14th Amendment right to due process. Essentially, the policies in place failed to provide the necessary procedural safeguards to protect his liberty in that specific situation.
Right. The process failed him.
Uh-huh.
And what about the damages? $25,000 for 23 minutes of this... City and county argued that was excessive. What did the court say about that?
Yeah.
Seems like a lot for less than half an hour.
Well, the 11th Circuit disagreed and upheld the $25,000 award. They pointed to the evidence presented at trial regarding Mr. Trezevant's mental anguish during the detention, the back pain he experienced, and the fact that he was denied medical treatment for that pain while in custody. The court recognized that compensatory damages under Section 1983 are meant to compensate the plaintiff for the actual harm suffered, both physical and emotional.
Okay, so it wasn't just the time.
No, exactly. They concluded that the jury had a reasonable basis to award that amount given the specific circumstances of Mr. Trezevant's experience. The court also briefly touched on the importance of upholding attorney's fees under 42 U.S.C. Section 1988.
Right, the fees.
These fee awards are crucial because they incentivize attorneys to take on civil rights cases, ensuring that individuals whose rights have been violated can actually afford legal representation to seek redress.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's interesting how the focus is so clearly on the policies of the municipality rather than the individual actions of the officer or the jailer in this case. Can you explain a bit more about why that distinction is so important in the context of Section 1983 liability?
Absolutely. This goes right to the heart of municipal liability under Section 1983. The Supreme Court has established that municipalities cannot be held liable solely under the principle of respondent superior, essentially. They can't be held automatically responsible just because one of their employees committed a constitutional violation while on the job.
Okay, so no automatic blame for the city just because an employee messed up.
Exactly. Instead, the liability must be based on the municipality's own actions or policies. This is why the focus in Trezevant was squarely on the inadequacies of the City of Tampa and HCBJ's policies regarding the detention and release of individuals arrested for minor offenses.
Okay.
On the other hand, individual officers often have what's called qualified immunity. This protects them from liability unless their conduct violates clearly established statutory or constitutional rights and they knew or should have known about those rights.
Right. Qualified immunity. We hear that term a lot.
In Trezevant, the jury found that while Mr. Trezevant's rights were violated due to the flawed policies, the individual officer and jailer were essentially following those policies and weren't necessarily acting with the requisite level of culpability to overcome qualified immunity.
So they were doing their job, albeit under bad policy.
Pretty much. So the municipality can be directly liable when their policies are the moving force behind the constitutional harm, even if the individual employees carrying out those policies are shielded from personal liability.
That really clarifies why the focus was on the systemic issues rather than individual misconduct in this particular case. So for a law student listening to this, what's the key takeaway from Trezevant v. City of Tampa? What should they really remember?
Okay, the central takeaway is that municipalities can indeed be held liable under Section 1983 for constitutional violations that directly result from their official policies or established customs.
Policy or custom. Got it.
And this liability can exist even when the deprivation of liberty seems relatively brief, like Mr. Trezevant's 23-minute detention. The crucial factor is whether the detention or any other constitutional violation was a direct consequence of the municipality's own flawed policies or procedures. This case also highlights the importance for municipalities to develop clear and constitutionally sound policies regarding the processing of minor offenses, particularly concerning the ability to post bond promptly. Regular review and updating of these policies are essential to prevent similar situations and potential liability down the road.
So this case really underscores the importance for cities and counties to have well-defined policies and procedures in place that adequately protect individuals' constitutional rights at every stage, even in seemingly minor or, you know, unusual situations like a traffic stop where someone wants to post bond immediately.
Definitely.
It also makes you consider the broader implications for municipal policymaking beyond just this specific scenario.
Precisely. Trezevant serves as a potent reminder that municipalities have a responsibility to ensure their operational policies align with constitutional principles. Failure to do so can lead to significant legal and financial consequences, even if the individual employees involved aren't held personally liable.
This brings up a final thought for our listeners then. Considering this moving force doctrine we discussed, what are some other potential areas within municipal operations where seemingly neutral policies, perhaps related to things like resource allocation, training protocols for new recruits, or even the specific software used for record keeping in detention facilities, could inadvertently create the conditions for constitutional violations and thus lead to municipal liability?
That's a great question to ponder.
It really makes you think about the broader systemic implications of how local governments operate and the cascading effects of policy choices, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It encourages a critical examination of the entire framework of municipal governance and how even seemingly innocuous policies can have profound impacts on individual rights. It's not always the obvious things.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive. Thanks for joining us as we unpacked Trezevant v. City of Tampa. We hope this has given you a clearer understanding of municipal liability under Section 1983.
Hope it was helpful.
Join us next time for another deep dive into a fascinating area of the law.